Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another segment of the show, Triple E's Education, Empowerment, Entrepreneurship. Today's guest is Terry Lewis, wrongfully convicted and recently, by God's grace and mercy, recently exonerated after serving 21 years in prison. Before we start, I want to say that I am not anti-police, nor am I anti-prosecution. But what I am, I'm anti-bad police and anti-bad prosecution. I believe the law is supposed to protect the innocent and punish the guilty. This was not the case. So welcome to the show, good brother.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you having me on, bro. Thank you much.
Well, we so appreciate you. You are part of the WOOC family. And, you know, I just want to say we go back as long as Crane Smoke.
Absolutely. Go yes, back like that.
That's right. Yeah. So tell us what happened. All right.
And I'm going to try to be as detailed as possible, but okay. Also, you know what I mean, use brevity as well. Right. In 1996, there was a robbery occurred, a botched robbery, which had led to the death of Mr. Bernard Howard Hugh. And the state witness, which was Mr. Bernard Howard, the descendant in the case, his girlfriend, she, during the time of the actual crime itself, she had admitted to smoking and using, having the usage of crack cocaine in her system 15 minutes before it happened. And she, according to her witnessing, is she believed that I was one of the perpetrators during the botched robbery, which led to the murder of Mr. Howard. And at this time, the Philadelphia Police Department in the late 90s and all through the 90s, early 80s as well, you know, as history reflects for the city of Philadelphia, they had a policy in place where due to the war on crime, the war on drugs, they were getting paid overtime to solve, you know, murders that was occurring due to the war on drugs. And in our impoverished, you know, neighborhoods. So based upon the lone testimony of an admitted crack user, and just going by record, you know, not to degrade anyone, they took this as an opportunity. When I say they, meaning the previous the Philadelphia Police Department, the previous administration. And in a nutshell, they had withheld evidence, and they actually they manufactured a case against me. They gave me a completely entire case. They put me there because one of the individuals who was the perpetrators, his nickname was Stank. And we shared commonality because I had went by in my younger days the nickname Stank. But what they fail to realize is the Stank who they suppose had been investigating and capturing is a guy by the name of Sade Muhammad, who actually, you know, I mean, wore ankle bracelet, who was on house arrest, who drove a particular car. The reason why I say this is because she was very descriptive in who she believed was there that night. This was during her second interview, meaning the star only witness, during her second interview 2 days after the crime had occurred. But again, unfortunately for me at that time, the Philadelphia Police Department, it was the norm during the Frank Rizzo era, during the Lynn Abraham, you know, administration as a DA together.
He was the Confederate of the North. Yeah,
absolutely. And he meant that. He was law and order. Yeah, I mean, you know, what they considered to be law and order and justice, you know what I mean? Law, you know what I mean? And disorder, you know, the oppression, you know what I mean? And uprooting the lives of people, you know? So if they were, the Philadelphia Police Department, if they weren't actually brutalizing individuals. Because I tell you, where I come up and grew up at, I witnessed this with my own eyes. I just didn't never think that something as tragic as what happened to me, with my life being uprooted from this department, would it actually personally happen, like I said, falling on my doorstep. But like I said, that was the norm at the time, wherein they just wanted to get the cases shut. They wanted to solve the cases by any means necessary. It was finality over any type of fairness. You know, I come from a poor neighborhood. I come from, you know, the slums of West Philadelphia. You know,
it was a human being. You were just a number, a case.
That's all I was. I was just a regular.
Something to move off the desk.
That's it. And I, we can get overtime by completing this and moving on to the next one. As you can see, I made number six exoneree in the city of Philadelphia from the Conviction Integrity Unit. They are, and they've been active. They've been proactive for the past 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. Underneath the leadership of the DA, Larry Kresner, and who's spearheading his Conviction Integrity Unit, Ms. Patricia Cummings. They are on their 14th exoneration within 2 years. Rest 14 exonerees.
Wow.
I made number six, and I only been here a year. So I said that to use as a highlight. It's obvious, you know, what the culture was with that the previous administrations during that time.
So then you wound up getting convicted. So let's speak to the piece about when you got convicted. How did you get them the ball and chain off your foot? You know, 21 years, and just walk through that briefly. You know the trials and errors, the ups and downs, the heartbreaks. It's, you know, all of that. You know. But wow. You didn't give up, basically.
No.
So we'll just touch on that real quick. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Well, as an adolescent, mind you, when I was falsely accused, I was 17 of age, right? Mm-hmm. It took them some time to, you know, manufacture a case against me, and they came to arrest me a year and a half later, almost 2 years later to be exact. And, you know, by then, like I said, they manufactured a complete case. So I went to state prison. I went to state prison at the age of 19.
19.
I went at the age of 19. I was wrongfully accused in an indictment against my name. The slander against my name had happened at the age of 17 in 1996. I was 17 years of age when this happened. It wasn't until, like I said, that towards the end of 98. Where they completed, you know, their botched investigation and concocting a case against me. So at 19, I got off the bus. I got off what we call the Bluebird. It was, you know, the Pennsylvania bus, you know, school bus, shackled, you know what I mean, bars on the windows, you know, iron rod, you know, circular rod, you know, on the floor where the chains can, you know, be mounted, you know, towards my ankles and my wrists. So at the age of 17, I had immediately begun to learn the legal jargon and to, you know, to fight, because I knew I needed the tools. I needed to know this legalese. So right. At 19, I was able to navigate, you know, myself pro se, being a pro se litigant, and chop through all of the, you know, the like I said, the draconian policies and laws that was in place. I wound up proving my innocence in 2009, right before a federal judge.
Okay, I want you to hold that thought, because we're gonna move into part two. Okay, all right.
Yes, sir.
And then we're going to move into segment two. And then I want you to continue on talking about, yeah, what it was. But what it is I want you to close out to that, because I want people to know who you are now and what you plan on doing. All right? Okay?
Cool.
Because we're going to bring you back to do more things. Okay? This is Inez Bosch's baby boy, H. Bosch Jr., and your overcoming adversity specialist, doing what I'm made to believe.